Welcome to Library Voices SC. This is Curtis Rogers, Communications Director at the South Carolina State Library. And today I am happy to have Heather Moorfield Lang with us in the studio. Dr. Moorfield Lang's research is focused in technology in education and libraries, specifically honing in on the narratives and uses of technology-based tools in those settings. She's currently the American Association of School Librarians Director for Region 4. Wow, how many regions are there?
All told, I believe there are 9, I'm not mistaken. Yes.
All right. And she's also a member of the AASL Board of Directors. She continues her work integrating technology in libraries and classrooms under her brand Tech15, which I'm eager to learn more about. Her current research involves exploring maker spaces in library settings around the world, along with policies, technologies, successes, and challenges that accompany those learning spaces. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So first of all, what are maker spaces for people who may not know?
Sure. Makerspaces is a reasonably new term, and when I say new, probably in the last 5 to 8 years, I don't have an exact date. The term came from Making or Make Zine, the magazine about making, because we've been making and crafting in libraries for years. There's research looking back to the early 1900s where we were making and crafting and quilting bees and book clubs.
The profession tends to draw very crafty people.
Yes, we are crafty. We are. And so it's a situation where within the last decade, we put the term makerspaces. And makerspaces is just a name for the space. Makerspaces, by definition, is a location where you can collaborate, tinker, play, explore, build, and craft. These could also be considered DIY or do-it-yourself locations in libraries. Sometimes they are also, there's a intertwining term of hackerspaces or fab labs. Hackerspaces tend to connect more with specific technologies and coatings. Fab labs have very specific fabrication technologies that go with those. So you're looking more at laser cutters, 3D printers, rapid prototyping. There's the whole list of things that go with fab labs. Makerspaces are locations where, as opposed to having a library where folks come in and absorb information, now libraries are becoming more and more of a location where we also build and create information too. Makerspaces are not for everybody, and they're also not for every library. Makerspaces are a situation or a location that is, librarians are going to have to look and see if they're the best idea for teens, children, the community at large. So I have visited libraries all over the world. Some places look more at learning commons, so locations where folks can come and study and meet and collaborate. Some people look at having a makerspace or a DIY location where folks can build and create and craft. And so there's a large, wide range of what a makerspace looks like. And the one thing that I have realized, I've been doing makerspace research now for going on 5 years, no two makerspaces are alike because no two communities in libraries are alike. They are answering the need of their communities.
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the things that I think is important to point out. Also, one of the things I failed to mention in your introduction is that you are an associate professor at the University of South Carolina's School of Library and Information Science.
So yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about your education background, what brought you into libraries, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, I have kind of an interesting background in education. I started out in middle schools in K-12 in North Carolina, started out as a middle school theater teacher, and then became a middle school librarian once I received my Master's of Library and Information Science at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. While I was working through that profession, I realized that I'd like to go even further. And so in 2008, I received my doctorate in curriculum and instruction. And at that point, I actually took on an academic librarian position at Virginia Tech. was teaching at Virginia Tech as well as working as a librarian, doing both, because when you're an academic librarian, you're teaching, you're training, mm-hmm. you're also doing collections, you're doing research, you're doing all sorts of stuff.
And but, you have to speak 8 languages and be able to catalog in them.
I don't know about all. That was not my area. I was the education librarian, but I did have friends who did speak multiple languages. I am not that one, though. There's other types of languages, I suppose. But yes, I did have friends who spoke multiple languages. And then a few, 3 years ago, back in 2014, a position came open for a professor for the School of Library and Information Science, specifically in school librarianship. And even though I had been working in an academic library setting or a college or university setting for those who, if we're breaking down the different libraries, I had found a position that focused in my research area, which has always really been education, mm-hmm. school librarianship. And they were looking for someone whose background was also in technology. And that's pretty much always been a theme through. I do a lot with technology integration, how different types of technology can be used in education and libraries. My whole makerspace area, that really started building in 2013 and 2014 as makerspaces were becoming more and more popular. Mm-hmm. And so that's what brought me here to Columbia, South Carolina, a little over 3 years ago.
Okay. So you're still new.
Still new. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to makerspaces, and one of the things I was looking at in some of your recent publications and some information is that makerspaces tend to go along with STEM and STEAM. Can you talk about the interaction there?
Sure. So STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. STEAM stands for the exact same thing, but the A in STEAM stands for arts. And so depending on which way a school or a public library, that doesn't tend to come up as much in academic libraries or college or university libraries. The STEM or the STEAM aspect comes up a great deal in the curriculum and also the curriculum ties. Because when you're looking at things such as assessment or evaluation or how you're going to be able to bring in collaboration or the integration of a makerspace in its fullest capacity, being able to tie it into a curriculum or a standard, or being able to tie it into a STEM project or a STEAM project or anything along those lines. So if you're looking at the weather in school, and you can tie, we can talk about that it's cold outside, sure. We can talk about the weather, yes. We can go through an activity or a worksheet, or we could build something. So I was actually at a school recently in Charleston where the students had to test what would keep ice cream colder longer, and they all had to build essentially their own form of insulation, and they had a competition of whose insulated item held ice cream colder the longest. That's a very different way of looking at insulation and cold and the weather, as opposed to talking about science and the weather and temperature and insulation and cold. And this was a group of third graders, if I remember correctly. And they're much more hands-on, and it's problem solving, and it's critical thinking, and it's collaboration, and it's learning, and it's fun. How dare it be fun? But it should be fun.
Well, you know, that's really interesting you mentioned that, because, I mean, it could even make, you know, one of those school kids get interested in pursuing that as a career, because you know, you can get a master's degree in materials management and mm-hmm. all those kinds of there's so much science involved in that.
Well, and as we're looking at, by I believe the date is by 2024, how many careers are going to need both an education, also backgrounds in technology and science, but definitely with an education background that is above high school. You're looking at having students who are learning this at an early age, having students who are having these handheld and hands-on activities. The opportunities for making and STEM and STEAM and all this type of learning is really leading students into these fields. And whether they end up doing this type of thing as a career, I had one school librarian and a collaboration with one of their teachers. He said, I don't care if they end up doing this for a living. If they ended up being a stay-at-home dad, as long as they were just, you know, this was a passionate, you know, something that they were excited and interested in, and even if these were activities that they could use with their kids at home, you know, it doesn't matter what you go after, but this has enriched their lives through
their
activities.
Yeah, they're creating. And, of course, you know, the opportunity to work with ice cream, there's an incentive.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Especially if you get some.
One of the makerspaces that I was able to visit in Virginia, they have a fully integrated makerspace program. And these were students that would soon be going into high schools. And they're going to be, more and more colleges are getting makerspaces, 3D printers, which do not go hand in hand automatically. But you're getting more and more of this type of technology in this up-and-coming. 3D printers aren't even up and coming anymore, but it's the type of situation where you've got these newer technologies, these really neat and cool technologies, and these students are going to go to college. These aren't going to be new for them. This stuff's already in their high schools. They already have laser cutters. Many of them already have 3D printers. They already are used to working with these things, and it's going to really put them ahead when they go into college, because these students in this high school are building drones, robotics. They were already working on all this design. I had one who was going into forestry. He said, yes, this may not hold me all of this that I'm learning here, but it's certainly items, ideas, critical thinking, all of that I can take with me into that field. But many of them were thinking about going into engineering, science fields, even if you're looking to go into education. Mm-hmm. We have such a need for science educators in secondary, middle school levels. We need them so much, especially in South Carolina, but overall in general in the U.S. If this encourages students to go in and teaching young people about STEM, STEAM, sure, those areas, and spreading this information and knowledge to generations to come, we need that as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned about 3D printers, mm-hmm, you know, I remember not too long ago when all the talk, you know, oh, we've got to get a 3D printer, mm-hmm, we've got to get a 3D printer, and, you know, this library has this 3D printer, and, you know, you tend to think, well, if you don't have programming, if you don't have anything specific around that, then what good are they?
Sure. It's the type of situation. The fervor for 3D printers over the last 5 years has certainly died down. They're very neat. Don't mm-hmm get me wrong. They're a cool technology, but you do have to have people who know how to use them, mm-hmm, work them. But they also have to have a really good program, idea, or way that you're going to be able to use rapid prototyping. I see them being used a great deal more at the college and university level, because
really,
that's where you really can find folks who are doing prototyping. Okay. I have an idea. I want to prototype that idea. Mm-hmm. I can do, because when you're creating these things out of the plastic that comes out of a 3D printer,
sure,
you can create again and again and again. It's a whole lot cheaper than wood, mm-hmm, or metal or anything like that. And so I see a lot of them there. You have to have, the other thing is they're still, even though they've gotten faster, they're still really slow. So if you're in a school and you have one 3D printer and you've got a class of 25 students, one, you're going to have to do things in groups more than likely. Everything just takes a really long time. Mm-hmm. They're not anywhere near as exciting as if you have a classroom kit. I have classroom sets of Strawbees.
Mm-hmm.
And Strawbees are just easy building components that you can make things out of straws. I have another class set of make-dos where you can make things out of cardboard. But I can have everything in students' hands in 10 minutes or less, ready to build. Everybody's got something that they're doing, and that's automatic. Or next week is our week of coding. It's Computer Science Education Week. This is being recorded in December. And so that particular week, that's going to be Hour of Coding, where folks can learn how to code and computer science. Everybody can be involved, as opposed to we have to wait one at a time to get something printed on a 3D printer.
Yeah.
And they sometimes get clogged up, and they sometimes break. And so it's just like any type of technology. We have to wait for it to get better and better and better.
What are the differences you see in public libraries and academic libraries with makerspaces? Do you see any academic libraries have kind of the same type or same scale of makerspaces as a public library would, or do they exist?
So academic libraries seem to focus on the programs that they are needing to answer to at their universities.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in the libraries, some of them are across their campus, some of them might be with an engineering program, just kind of depends. It's a wide range. Again, no two are alike. When it comes to a library, typically they're going to have, it's a range of things. I've seen anything from a one-button studio where students can go in and do public service announcements and videos and presentations, to just racks and rows of 3D printers. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of circuitry. It just kind of depends on what the students need, also the types of programs they have in their schools. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, when I went to visit Chapel Hill, they have a program called BEAM. And people like to, branding's really important as well.
Sure.
So BEAM is BA Maker. And so BEAM is all across campus, and you see the signs. So where you see BEAM, BA Maker, that's part of their making. Okay. And they've got like three or four across campus.
Okay.
And so one focuses more on woodworking, and one of them focuses more on rapid prototyping and 3D printing. And they've got a woodworking shop in the back that's really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And one is more library-based and collaborative, and they've got... So every single one of them's got a little bit something different they can provide students, but also they're all across campus so that students don't have to always go to only one location to get what they need. Public libraries, as it has always seemed to be for me, is they are looking at what they can provide their community.
Mm-hmm.
Because public libraries, though I've never served in a public library, but from all my public library friends, we are here to answer the needs of our community.
Right.
So, for instance, we're here in Richland County. We have just had, or they're just about to complete, a major, gorgeous renovation at the downtown public library.
Mm-hmm.
They originally started with a makerspace just for teens.
Mm.
It went really well, was very popular. They were one of the very first libraries I interviewed back in 2014. Now they're going to have a makerspace in their new renovated library for teens and children. That's on the bottom level.
Mm-hmm.
Then on their second level, they have a full adult makerspace that takes up almost the entire second floor. And it has green screen studios. It has an art design studio. It has augmented and virtual reality locations. It's got a scrapbooking area. I mean, and they have 7 full-time librarians or employees to help them put together all of their programs and resources, so you can take classes in painting and sculpture and design and how to code and create and how to do photography and green screen and video work and all of these different things. So it's what are you interested in and what can we provide you? Because for public libraries, you want to have the people in your community coming and using your programs,
mm-hmm.
or, and I could be wrong in this, but I don't think so, if you're not having folks come and visit and use your programs, what's it all for?
Mm-hmm.
And so with schools, we've already got everybody there. We're, of course, trying to get folks in the door and use them, but our students are in the building with us.
Mm-hmm.
So other than, you know, creating our collaborations with our students and figuring out the best way to deliver a good partnership with our teachers and figuring out our best way to really just serve everybody. It always boils down to service in our communities, but it's serving our communities in a bit of a different manner, depending
right.
on. So, of course, there are some similarities in what we're trying to deliver, but it's done differently.
Well, what have you seen with libraries who want to have makerspaces? Are they repurposing areas within the library, or are they actually, you know, construction, adding on to the library and making, you know, building facilities that are incorporating specific makerspace utilities?
So far, everything that I've seen is people who are repurposing locations and creating those spaces to be makerspaces. And not everybody's calling them makerspaces. More and more people are moving away from the term makerspaces.
And that's really a library term, isn't it?
It is a library and education term.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, there are subscription makerspaces out in communities where you can, like a gym.
Okay.
And but people are moving away from just the term makerspaces, because what will makerspaces be in 10 years?
Right.
And so when you get that $1 million grant, as we are all want to do, I am joking, when you get that $1 million grant and Curtis Rogers wants to put his name on a wall, is it going to be the Curtis Rogers Makerspace, or is it going to be maybe the Curtis Rogers Center for Innovation?
Ah, yeah.
And
there's
so,
a big difference in that, because people can understand what Center of Innovation means.
Right.
You know.
And so I have seen so many different names over the years. So things like laboratory or collaboratory or the steam engine or the innovation station. And so people are calling them a lot of different things. It depends on the age of the group that you're working with, because some of those won't mean anything to a really young crowd. And so, but if you're going to have your name etched on a piece of glass, you really want to make sure that it's going to stay and that it's going to be something that's going to mean something in the next 10 years. Because in 10 years from now, makerspaces, I don't see them as a fad. And even if they're a trend, there's a trend to the type of services we're delivering. But it's the type of thing where what will this makerspace, quote unquote, be 10 years down the road? We might still be making, creating, crafting, but the technologies are probably going to be a little bit different. Things are going to change. What are those services going to look like? What's going to be, you know, more emerging trends? Are there going to be more of a focus on robotics, Internet of Things? Are we going to be doing more with cybersecurity? Or we could be going back more towards what type of services we're delivering to our community along the lines of taxes and healthcare, along those lines. It just kind of depends, not to get into any type of debate, but it just kind of depends on what it is that you're looking to provide.
And, you know, I think as I've, you know, been working here for almost 24 years, and I've seen a huge evolution in libraries, especially public libraries, in relationship to their community and what their community's needs are. And you know, do you see makerspaces, you know, as continuing that evolution of libraries from just being, you know, a depository for books?
Yes. And libraries still have books. Libraries are going to be the places for books to get your read on. We also have plenty of locations that I found out recently that Overdrive is the provider of 90% of the digital ebooks for public libraries in the U.S. I think I'm giving the right quote on that because I just saw them at a conference. I was just like, my gosh, good for them. I mean, it's a great product. But it's so you've got your online, your digital ebooks, you've got your print books, but it's also about the space because folks want a location that they can go to get powder, have a place that they can work and study. Some folks need a location where they can get information for their careers. Some folks, we've got so many folks who are telecommuting now, so they're looking for a place that may not be at home that they can do a little telecommuting, a little telework, that they can work from, so they can get out of the house and do a little bit of work, you know, outside of their location, a place with some internet that they can work, a place where you might can get a coffee, a cafe. It's become such a community hub. I've heard it described as you know, the living room for the community. I worked for a director who looked at libraries as a business or a startup. So what can you provide? I'm beginning to see academic libraries. So even if you look, we're here at the university or near the University of South Carolina. And so University of South Carolina is, yes, there's the books and there's the materials, but the University of South Carolina Thomas Cooper Library is also where you get the Writing Center, the Center for Faculty Development. That's also where the archives are. That's where special collections are. I think when I worked at Virginia Tech, there was the Writing Center, the Communications Center. They're becoming these hubs of where other people on campus want a piece of that real estate so that you can go there and you can get everything in one spot. So you can get your books, you can get your research. You can also put all that research together. You can present that research. You can get feedback on that research. Need some help with writing? Oh, we can help you with that. All of that type of stuff. If you're a faculty member and you need some help with your presentations or what you're doing in class, we can help you with that. All of that type of stuff is there. And I'm beginning to see that in public libraries as well, because if you look at what's being offered in many public libraries, do you need help with taxes during tax time? We had flooding here 2 years ago. Where was everyone going to get help with their FEMA information, with their tax information, with their health information? They were going to the public library. Where would you like to go to learn about making anything from a book purse to taking photos of your kids in a new photo class, all or digital photography class? All of that's being offered there. On top of my husband was in a cybersecurity group. One of his cybersecurity groups, they met there. They have Toastmasters if you'd like to work on your wordsmithing, which I probably should join. And, you know, so you've got all these. It's become such a community center. And, yes, makerspaces are certainly helping because there are plenty of people who love to craft and work and build and create. And also, back in 2008 into 2010, you had people who were out of work. This became a way for them to make, create, craft, and actually make an income.
And
learn a new skill.
And that's when we started to see a lot of libraries have job centers, you know, places where they're showing the public how to create a resume and use different skills or learn different skills that they because they had been doing the same thing for 25 years and got laid off, they didn't know how to use a computer and a mouse.
Exactly.
So libraries really do fill those needs that come up often. Kind of in closing, what do you see as the future of maker spaces in libraries?
I am horrible at future casting. I will go ahead and tell you right here now. I get asked this all the time. What I have noticed over the last 5 years is that we've gone from kind of a wide scope of maker spaces of what do we want this to look like? We should have these particular things, 3D printers, they're the most important. All of those types of things. What I've begun to really notice is a focus on exactly what is needed for my school, my college, university, my community, really focusing on the needs of who we are serving. Mm-hmm. And I've always seen librarianship as a serve-based industry. Mm-hmm. We, without our clients, our patrons, not everybody likes that name, but without the people that we are working with in our libraries, why are we there? Mm-hmm. And not everybody agrees with me on that. That's fine. I'll live my life. But it's the type of thing, and that's the reason why we have such a strong professional learning network, and it's why we are so passionate about our field in librarianship. That's fine. We can all agree to disagree on any of those terms. But it's the type of thing where that focus, I think, will continue to – it may narrow, it may have to widen, but it's going to continue to role with the community as what is needed, because depending on, not to get political, but things continue to change. Mm-hmm. As we have changes in our schools, our political climates, our communities, our neighborhoods change, you have to change what it is that you're delivering to the folks who are coming into your library.
Definitely.
And so I think that's going to be something that will affect it. And there are other areas. There are other areas of focus that will come along that will be of interest. There's many libraries that have makerspaces. There are many who don't. Mm-hmm. I don't always feel that it is the answer for everybody, as I said earlier.
Sure, because like you said, it depends on the community.
Totally depends on the community. But it's the type of thing where I've seen it go from, I always compare it to, I'm holding my arms out like this wide funnel, and folks have really narrowed it down to the people that they are working with or serving in their mm-hmm. community. And I think that will continue. Mm-hmm. Things may change, technologies will change, all that will change, but it's very much how are we becoming part of that body of that creation of knowledge.
Definitely. Anything about makerspaces we failed to hit on? Nope, we hit on everything.
I could go on and on for hours.
Yeah,
I was about to say, I've got a book coming out. There's all sorts of things. I mean, the thing about makerspaces is it will continue to be an interesting area of research. I've got friends of mine in the Netherlands and in Germany, and how they've got a real focus on the traditionalism mm-hmm. of librarianship. And mm-hmm. we have some of that here, of course, too.
Sure.
And making that change there, as I was talking to my friends there over the past few years, that's been very interesting. You have a lot of situations in other countries where many schools don't have libraries, but mm-hmm. the community libraries are the school libraries, and
right.
then where the makerspaces fit there, mm-hmm. How they serve their communities in other countries. That's very interesting. And then I do a lot of research on mobile makerspaces, where you're taking the makerspaces to people, because you don't always have a makerspace, a space that is dedicated for making. So you either, it has to be on wheels, or you pull everything out when the making is going to happen, or those types of things. So I have a whole body of research that is on that. And then even my research is becoming much more focused. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at makerspaces and accessibility and making sure that our makerspaces are available for all. Looking at makerspaces and LGBT communities, mm-hmm. makerspaces and those people who, similar to Richland Public Libraries here, when they are now on their second and third makerspaces and what they learn from their first ones,
okay.
Things like that. So even my focus is getting more and more narrow as mm-hmm. the years go on, because there's more that I can hone in on.
Right.
As opposed to just like, you've got a makerspace, tell me about it.
Right, exactly.
And I've kind of gone past that research. Now I can really get mm-hmm. into, the much more finite areas of it. Yep. So that's interesting.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure there are a lot of great resources, and I will get some links from you, and we'll include links on our podcast page. So thank you again so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been fun.